Welcome to Digital Age, a program covering politics, media, and the way we live in the digital age.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Walden University, offering business professionals MBA and PhD programs online in a variety of specializations. WaldenU.edu.
Good evening. This is the Digital Age. I'm Jim Zirin. Tonight's show is about the Internet and Wall Street. A little more than a year ago, Steve Chen, then 26 years old and a college dropout, teamed up with a buddy of his named Chad Hurley. Chad Hurley was 28 and wanted to go to grad school. But instead, they decided to start their own business in a garage in San Jose, California. The business they called YouTube. YouTube was an online video share. A year later, YouTube had few assets, had some debt, and had no earnings or profits. But the two sold the company to Google for $1.65 billion. Amazing. We asked the question tonight, by reason of this phenomenon, are we on the crest of an internet boom, or is the bubble about to burst? If anyone knows the answer to this question, it is tonight's guest. Mary Meeker is the star tech analyst for Morgan Stanley, the powerhouse investment banking firm. Morgan Stanley took Google public 2 years ago with great success. Mary Meeker has covered internet stocks for the last decade. Mary Meeker, welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to see you, Jim.
Now, let's start with the question Shakespeare asked, what's in a name? What is the name Google? What is it supposed to be?
Well, it relates to an infinite number. And what Google wants to do, their mission statement is to organize all the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful. That's a lot of information, and some might call it infinite. And they've been going after managing a lot of the, helping users find content and words and text. With the YouTube deal, they're now going after organizing video.
Now, President Bush at a news conference a few days ago was asked about Google, and he referred to it as the Google, but there's no the in Google, is there?
Some might think there should be, right. But officially there is not.
Now, Google has become a metaphor for the net, isn't that right?
Some might say that. That's a little bit of a stretch, but it's become a word that people think about or a site that people think about when they're thinking about finding information.
And 2 years ago, when they went public, one of the risk factors on the 23 pages in the prospectus that talked about risk factors was that Google's name would become synonymous with search, so that it would have a secondary meaning and it would not have trademark or copyright protection. Has Google's name become synonymous with search the way Kleenex is synonymous with paper napkins?
I think there are surveys that would indicate that. That said, I think that Yahoo has a very successful search engine, and a lot of users of Yahoo's site use Yahoo Search for searching for things. But oftentimes when people are thinking about finding something, if they have one place to go, they will go to Google.com to find that.
Now, when you, your firm, Mary, brought out Google 2 years ago, the public offering price, the initial public offering mm-hmm. price was as low as 85, isn't that right?
That's right.
And the stock has now risen in value something like 465%, and according to analysts' assessments, yep. is even going to be stronger than that before the end of the year. What accounts for this spectacular rise?
The stock is in the high 400s right now, and when the IPO was priced, you may recall that the company did not provide a lot of information about the business. They didn't provide a lot of information about where they were taking the company. And there was a lot of frustration among investors at people wanted to have their hands held a little bit, and Google didn't do that. They basically said, you need to figure out where we're going. If you like where we're going, and you trust in the long term and trust that we have a good strategy, you should buy our stock. If you don't, stay away. And in the end, very few people bought the stock. The filing range for the initial public offering was originally about $108 a share to $135. There wasn't enough interest to support an IPO at that level, so it ended up being priced at about $85 a share. And I think it might have traded down right out of the box and then quickly traded up to about $100. And you ask about why are we where we are today with the stock price. The company has executed far better than most people expected. There was a lot of concern when they were going public in the summer of 2004 that Microsoft, with all of its might, would come out with a very competitive product in short order. Our view at the time was that we expected that Microsoft might come out with a very competitive search product by the end of 2004 and launch a $100 million advertising campaign. Here we are more than 2 years later, and that hasn't happened yet. And so they've gained market share in search. What Google is for users, it's a site that people go to find information. But what Google is for its advertisers and for businesses.
And the advertisers give Google the revenues.
Yep.
Principal revenues.
Yes. And they, what Google is for them is a customer acquisition tool. And Yahoo is the same way. Other sites are the same way. eBay is that way for many businesses. But when you think about what businesses always want customers. So Google is providing a great solution for that. And what has happened with the site over the course of the last couple of years is when people first went to Google 3-4 years ago, that most of the results were the natural search results in the middle of the page. As they evolved their advertiser-sponsored links on the right side of the page or the top of the page, that base of advertisers got larger and larger. Google's ability to match the advertisements with the searches continued to improve. So over time, the percentage of searches that occur on the side of the page or the top of the page has continued to rise, will likely continue to rise, and it improves the user experience for both the searcher, because they get better results, and it improves the selling experience for the sellers, because they get more effective about matching their advertisements with the user.
So they can focus their ads on users who are interested in their product.
Right.
And which they don't get in the print media, for example.
Not as effectively.
They don't know if they're reaching the right people or not.
And it's interactive. So you can click, and then they know instantaneously if you've clicked, if you've converted, and the conversion is the sale. And your core question was, why has the stock gone up as much as it has? They've executed very well. The numbers have been better than expectations. And the vision about what the company could become or can become has evolved over time. And it goes back to the initial point you made about the folks at YouTube. Now, if we look at the internet, we believe that more than half of internet traffic is video, of which very little is monetized. A lot of it is illegal, and a lot of it is peer-to-peer file sharing of videos that are pirated.
These are smart guys, right? You've met them.
Yes.
They know what they're doing.
They're smart, yes.
And Google is cash rich, isn't it?
They are cash rich.
And they just plunked down on the table $1.65 billion for this company that had no earnings, no earnings history, started by two guys in a garage. Mm-hmm. Is it a case of a fool and his money being soon parted, or did they know what they were doing?
In the end, these deals are always about execution. And one of the things
What do you mean by execution?
Well, I have found that as a stock picker, what I try to do is I try to find big market opportunities, and then I try to find good products, and then I try to find great management teams. A great management team can take a good product and build a great company. A bad management team can take a great product and build nothing. So when one is looking at how a business can evolve, the biggest challenge is determining human error. And human error is a very hard thing to predict. You can't predict it. In fact, a big issue is oftentimes you can't predict human error when it happens. And oftentimes you don't know until many years after, many quarters after. Where I'm going with that is the opportunity for Google to create a core hub for accessing video content on the internet and creating a mechanism where the creators of that content can make money from it is absolutely there. Whether they execute to it is to be determined. But if we think about it, I made the point earlier that there's a lot of video on the web today that is not easily accessible and it's not monetized. What YouTube has done a very good job of doing is they've done a very good job of having the video tagged. So, for example, you like to play golf. If you happen to have your camcorder phone on a golf course and you saw, you were videotaping someone when they got a phenomenal hole in one and it was funny and there were interesting things about it.
Have you ever gotten a hole in one?
I actually have gotten a hole in one.
Oh, well, fun.
It was fun and it was a once in a lifetime thing. I didn't expect it and it probably will never happen again. But anyway, the. It was not videotaped.
For YouTube or anybody else.
It was not videotaped. No. But someone did. Yeah, it's a long story, but it was not videotaped.
But let me ask you this.
But hang on. There's a point here. Back off golf, but to the point. Let's say you happen to have this great video, and you're really excited about it. Let's say you're playing with someone famous, and they get a hole-in-one, and they're excited about the video. You could easily go home, post that on the internet, and tag it. You could have the person's name. You could have golf. You could have the golf course. You could have the hole. Let's say it was a famous golf hole. And what would happen is when people would search on that, what we're moving to is people could go to Google and type in that person's name, type in that golf course. That video may show up on the side of the page, and Google may sell advertising around it, may sell sponsored ads around it, or you may be able to charge people to view it. The essence here is that it's tagged, and you tagged it because you wanted people to be able to find it. And with all the video that's on the internet today, the majority of it is not tagged. So it's actually hard to find exactly what you're looking for.
Well, let's just look at YouTube for a moment. YouTube has a website. We can put the website on the screen. And let's do that.
Okay.
And it's not a very prepossessing looking website the way Google is, but mm-hmm. it has uploaded video clips mm-hmm. that viewers have put on the site. Now Google has something called Google Video. Mm-hmm. The digital age is on Google Video.
Okay.
You put James Goodale or Digital Age or James Zirin in the search, mm-hmm. and you come up with our last five programs
okay.
anywhere in the world. Now, why is this any different from what YouTube does?
Over time, it may not be different. But when Google launched Google Video, their initial idea was to post for pay content on the site, whether it's content from your show, whether it's content from the Brady Bunch, whether it's content from the NBA. One of the more popular videos for sale on Google Video was Kobe Bryant's, I can't remember the number of points, but 90-point-plus game, and then they sold the Wilt Chamberlain 101-point game. Forgive me for not having the number of points exactly right, but you search for those events, and you could find them and click for them and buy them. YouTube came from a different beginning, and that content was, in the early days, was not professional content, it was amateur content. And what's interesting to me about the evolution of media today is that these 3-minute clips, and I'm generalizing, that are amateur in nature, oftentimes very funny because people happen to be in the right place at the right time. And when I first watched some funny videos on the internet, I was reminded of the early days of MTV when music was presented in a different way to users, and was also reminded of the early days of Saturday Night Live. Whether it was Dan Aykroyd or John Belushi or Chevy Chase or any of those guys, that comedy struck a chord with America that we hadn't quite seen before. And I think a lot of these videos have done the same thing.
And so you think it was a good deal for Google to have made?
I think there's a far better chance than not it will prove to be a good deal for Google. I think it's already proven to be a good deal for mm-hmm. YouTube. But I think at a very high level, I think it will prove, when we look back on this deal 5 years from now, I think we will look at it as a transforming moment in the evolution of video content on the internet. And my hope and my bet is that this was an event that will push the traditional content creators to focus more aggressively on monetizing their content on the internet. And it's going back to golf. A couple years ago, when Tiger Woods hit that great shot on the 16th hole at Augusta, and holed out, and the Nike ball was on the lip of the cup, and it just the swoosh was right there, and the ball hesitated, and then it fell in. I had missed that on TV, and I'd wanted to watch it, so I went to the internet. I tried to find it. It was very hard to find it. I said, "Why can't I find this? I would pay to have this on the internet." And there are so many events like that that people care about that they simply can't find that they would pay for. And what we believe what Google's about to do, and Yahoo, others are in the same camp, is they will be able to provide a revenue stream to the content creators that will make them excited about it.
Okay, let's talk for a minute about Google's competition. You mentioned Yahoo. In fact, Yahoo was one of the original owners of Google. Mm-hmm. Investors in Google.
Yes.
They sold shortly after the public offering. Mm-hmm. AOL was an investor in Google.
Right.
In the 22 pages of risk factors in the Morgan Stanley underwritten offering, they said, we face significant competition from Microsoft and Yahoo, the principal competitors. Now, it appears Google has a 50% market share mm-hmm. as a search engine. You have a counterpart at Oppenheimer & Company named Sasha Zorovich, who recently said, in search, there are only three players. Google is doing everything right. Microsoft is doing everything wrong. And Yahoo is stumbling somewhere in between. You agree with that assessment?
Well, Google has the leadership spot in search. Microsoft, we're still waiting to see what their play is going to be. Yahoo can't be counted out at all in search. And it's the thing I come back to when thinking about this question and thinking about the positioning of the players in the market. It's not all about search. I have a hard time believing one player takes all on the internet. That has typically not been the way things have necessarily played out, but there are often a handful of leaders. And I think about Yahoo somewhat differently. I think about Yahoo as a place that users go to have information served up to them. I think about Google as a place where people go when they know what they're looking for. For example, I go to the Yahoo homepage every day, multiple times per day. I have a My Yahoo page set up, and it's as I look at a newspaper in the morning or read a newspaper online at night, it serves information up to me that I may not know I'm looking for. And Yahoo's ability to serve in part as an editor and as a server of information and wrap search, contextually relevant search, around those pages they serve up, I think is a very powerful opportunity. And their business is in a bit of a transition right now from a revenue standpoint, but their usage growth is phenomenal. They had 20% plus page view growth last quarter. They have very strong user growth. They have 400 to 500 million unique visitors per month, and they're in the process of upgrading their search product, which we're hearing good things about. That will roll out. It's already rolled out. It will roll out in a bigger fashion in the first half of next year.
But they've lost market share to Google.
They've lost some market share, and they've lost revenue share because the product that they've had to date has not been as effective at monetizing the clicks and the conversions for the advertisers. That's the thing that they're upgrading. And if that works out well, that will increase their revenues.
Indeed, in the last quarter, Google far exceeded the street's mm-hmm. estimates as to how they would perform,
right.
While Yahoo had a loss for the quarter, and so did other players in the field. Isn't that right?
Well, Yahoo didn't have a loss, but
they were below expectations.
Their revenue growth in search was far below Google's revenue growth. And I do want to take a step back, because there are two parts to search. There is query growth, which is the number of searches that people do, and then there's the monetization of those queries. And the difference between Google's query growth and Yahoo's query growth is not nearly as large as a difference between Google's monetization and Yahoo's monetization. Some estimates indicate Yahoo's monetization of that search is 30 to 40% below Google's. Their goal.
What do you mean by monetization?
That means that for the advertiser, it's more effective and more efficient to advertise on Google's site. Yahoo's goal is to bring that back to parity or best it.
Now, in 2000, when Barron's called you a queen of the net, you were also excited and bullish about the sector. Those bullish predictions didn't quite come to pass, did they?
Well, a couple things. I think that was in 1999, for what that's worth.
Okay, we'll
and,
back up here.
Couple things. One, at a high level, our predictions have played out on the growth rates. In fact, if you go back and look at our research, we were too conservative on our user and revenue growth estimates for the companies. We did not catch the downturn that happened in 2000 at all. 2000 was a very bad year for me as a stock picker. My annual return for the stocks that we had positive ratings on in 2000 was a negative 50%. I'm rounding these numbers. We have data for about 13 years of performance. My average annual return exceeds 40% in spite of that awful year in 2000. And I must disclose that past performance is not an indicator of future results. And we do tend to focus on a sector that is very volatile. But we didn't catch the downturn. And an interesting data point is if we look at the value of the internet companies, and we look at the top five internet companies today, we look at their value at the time of their IPO. Those top five include Google, Yahoo, eBay, Amazon.com, and Yahoo Japan. Their pre-IPO their IPO market value was less than $5 billion if we look at 2000 pre-2000 time periods. At the peak in March of 2000, the aggregate market value of those companies was about $150 billion. If we look at the trough for those five companies in late 2002, the value was $30 billion. If we look at the value today, it's about $260 billion. So we're up about 50% from the NASDAQ peak. We're up sevenfold from the post-NASDAQ peak trough.
Although some.coms, notoriously, which came out with IPOs in the late 90s and in 2000, yep. Then went belly up. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no disputing that. But an important thing for investors in any new technology to always remember and think about, and we have data that goes back for 25 years on this, 1% of the companies that go public, 1% of the companies that go public in the technology area typically account for more than 95% of the wealth creation. And in public market parlance, a winner is called a 10-bagger, a big winner, a stock that goes up tenfold from the IPO.
That's like two home runs and a half.
That's big. It's big. And you're a Yankees fan and a Mets fan, mm-hmm. And sorry about that right now. But, yes, you're right. On average, only two of those companies in the technology space go public per year. So the vast majority of companies that make it to the public markets fail. The vast majority that never make it to the public markets fail. And so the key is always to have a portfolio approach to investing in these companies. And people always want to know, what one company do I buy? What one company do I buy? And it's a bad strategy, because one must have a few bets. If you pick the right space, whether it's the emerging airline industry multiple years ago, or the auto industry years ago, or the internet industry, if you get on the right idea and buy a handful of companies, you can often do quite well. If you go back to the personal computer industry, in the software industry, if you bought Microsoft and Lotus and Ashton Tate and Software Publishing and Harvard Graphics in the early 80s, one of them helped you do extraordinarily well.
So give us a few companies where you think that there's a bullish forecast. I mean, what is the cutting edge? What is the new technology? What are the new web spaces that where you foresee considerable growth?
The areas that we're focused, number one, over the next 2 to 3 years, determining how video usage and video monetization on the internet grows is a big deal. I think it's conceivable that the traditional media companies who get that strategy right actually surprise themselves with success. One of the things that's hard for companies to make bets on in technology transitions is you have to make the bet you can make it up on volume, meaning you may have sold 100,000 of a unit at 10, you may have to bet you can sell a million at 5 or a million at 1. And that's a really hard bet for people to make. It's challenging. So I think some of the traditional media companies will get this right. It's not the area I focus on, but I think that will occur. The infrastructure companies, like the Ciscos of the world, that are covered by folks like Scott Coleman and John Marchetti at Morgan Stanley, should benefit from the infrastructure builds as it relates to video. So that's in Yahoo, Google, others
as
well.
And what about handhelds?
Mobile is another market we're very excited about. It's already a very large market around the world, especially in Asian markets. The largest mobile player in the world is China Mobile, with more than 200 million mobile users, and is the company that has among the highest percentage of data services revenue in the world, meaning SMS and MMS messaging revenue and wallpaper screensavers and things of that ilk. The U.S.
What is
market,
SMS?
Those are short messages that right. users send back and forth to one another on mobile phones, which
text messages.
Yes.
So I can find the pizza parlor nearest some location in California, or I can find the latest price of Google. I can do all that on my handle.
Via text messaging, also via search.
Yes. And there are other companies that have emerged recently, which certainly feature interesting technologies. Yep. Skype and Dig and Snowcap, as well as YouTube.
Yep.
Could you explain? And then I think you told me about Slingbox,
right?
Where you
right.
could watch anything on your home television set when you're in Cambodia via handheld.
I'm not sure the 3G service is available in Cambodia.
Well,
but I need
the
to check
telephone
that
services, yep. mobile telephone yep. service. So maybe yep. it is, but certainly in London. Yep. Those are all technical. Can you just tell us for a second, because we're running out of time,
One of the companies, especially because we are on TV, it let's say your wife is traveling in Singapore and your show is on and she wants to watch it, and you have a Sling box at home, which is a box you can buy for a couple $100s, maybe a little lower than that, but it's not terribly expensive. It's about this large, and you connect it to your cable box on your TV. And when that's connected, assuming you have an internet connection in your home, it can be Wi-Fi or directly connected in the Sling box, you can go to the Sling Media website and dial into your home TV set and watch your TV wherever you are in the world. And there are certain, if you have the Verizon Motorola Q phone in the U.S., they have software where you can watch TV on your mobile device. I think that's a very exciting service. I think it will change the way people think about how they consume
media. Okay, I think it's time for our questions.
Okay.
I have two questions for you. The first is, how high do you think Google's going to go this year?
I have to have my qualifying statement. I apologize for not doing that up front. Morgan Stanley does seek to do investment banking business for a lot of these companies, and I do own shares in some of these companies. So with that aside, our discounted cash flow valuation for Google is $550 a share. And if they execute, it could go there. If they execute, it could go higher.
Good. And will the internet bubble burst anytime soon?
There will always be parts of it that are constantly bursting. But the overriding trend of the internet as a big idea, a transforming idea, is here to stay for a long time.
Mary Meeker, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you, Jim.
And thank you for coming by. Tune in next week and learn more about the digital age. For the digital age, I'm Jim Zirin. Good night.